WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Chuck Sievertson. Calling for a diplomatic solution to the Iran-Israel crisis, a United Nations official at an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council today. Mideast governments and leaders of France, Germany, and the United Kingdom agree. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth.
Any retaliation by Iran against the United States of America will be met with force far greater than what was witnessed.
Reaction in Congress is mixed. Republican leaders back the decision. Congressman Jim Himes, Connecticut Democrat, is not the only lawmaker saying Congress should have been consulted.
This raid was signaled many days in advance. It's not inconceivable that the Iranians, not being dumb people, might have put this stuff on a truck and taken it elsewhere, in which case we just, you know, closed a bunch of, you know, tunnels in a mountain.
President Trump lashing out at Republican Congressman Thomas Massie of Kentucky for acting without congressional approval. This is ABC News. A man who really delivered has died. ABC's Brian Clark.
Instead of shipping goods point to point, Fred Smith had an idea. Why not ship to and from a central hub? Memphis was the hub for his company, Federal Express, when he launched it in 1973. He told Goldman Sachs that while his Yale education was valuable,
but I learned how to do a lot of stuff in the service, and I saw it at a grand scale.
Smith served as a Marine captain in Vietnam. He was also a substantial philanthropist.
Fred Smith was 80. Scam alert, crooks posing as law enforcement threatening you with arrest if you don't pay a missed jury duty fine. Judge Douglas Cole with the Southern District of Ohio.
The first contact from the court is always going to be mailed. But again, the key point is they're never going to call and ask you for money or tell you, hey, we need you to pay this to make this arrest warrant go away or something like that.
His Honor says there's been a recent spike locally in these swindles. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the UW system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station, and on the app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local civic media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Shali Pittman. A new effort is helping Wisconsin farmers protect water quality in their communities. Judith Ruiz Branch has more.
A joint effort is helping Wisconsin farmers protect water quality in their communities by learning more about how to prevent manure and fertilizer spills and runoff. The Nutrient Management Farmer Education Program is a collaboration across six counties in northern Wisconsin with partners from the University of Wisconsin, technical colleges, and the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. It helps farmers properly manage manure and fertilizer applications to optimize crop growth while protecting water sources. Athens dairy farmer Wayne Gajewski says one of the biggest benefits is the collaborative aspect where farmers learn as much from the instructors as they do from each other.
I think it's a win-win. It's good for farmers, it's good for the environment, and it's good for the public in general because farmers are trying to be as efficient as they can and, you know, without polluting or doing any harm to the environment.
State law requires farmers to develop and follow nutrient management plans to minimize their environmental impact. Gajewski says the training enables them to create these plans independently, reducing reliance on potentially costly external services. Kirk Langfoss is a conservation analyst with Marathon County County. He says the grants allow them to offer incentives to farmers and help cover their tuition.
They can get up to $750 reimbursement on soil testing. They can get payments to do manure testing. They commit to between 8 and 12 hours a year when they come to the class, so it reimburses them for their time.
Agriculture spills have been prevalent across Wisconsin, with one reported last month in Monroe County. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org. For Civic Media News, I'm Shali Pittman.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
With your Fox Valley forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear skies, lows in the mid-70s. We'll have a southwest wind continuing to gust to 25 miles per hour. Another breezy, hot, and humid day for Monday. Showers and thunderstorms likely in the afternoon. Highs near 86, heat index over 90.
Right now, it's 93.
John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
On Monday's show, we'll talk with Brittany Merlot about this crazy midsummer weather and some racing talk straight from the pits. Mino and the Mayor, join us.
From Denmark to De Pere, this is 97.9 WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Hello and welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. To start us off, we have Matt and Air on air. In this segment, they talk to retired Army Major General Randy Manner, who returns to the show to talk about the military parade, which took place last Saturday. He spoke about the opinion those serving has regarding being in the parades and how they are a drain on time, resources, money, and work. And he also gives his opinion on deploying the military to assist ICE. So stay tuned.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us. Call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Or you can leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Delighted to be joined by a frequent guest of ours. And if you watch cable news, he has been all over the place on shows much bigger than ours. Retired Major General Randy Manner is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Jane and Greg and Calvin. Good to see you all again.
Appreciate you making time for us. There are a lot of things going on. I wanted to start off with a little bit talking about the big parade on Saturday, marking the 250th birthday of the Army, also in conjunction with Donald Trump's 79th birthday. There were a lot of comments that I saw, Randy, about the lack of precision, I guess I would say, in the marching that was displayed. And there are some folks who think that that was deliberate, that that was a deliberate sign from our troops, maybe kind of a passive-aggressive sign from our troops that they really didn't want to be there.
Okay, so first of all, I need to thank all the members, past and present, of the U.S. Army for celebrating 250 years of service to our nation. It's absolutely amazing that we have been able to sustain a heritage of service to our citizens and defending our country. And so my sincere thanks go out to every single soldier, past and present. And my thanks to all the soldiers that were in that parade. I need to tell all of your listeners, soldiers hate parades.
I bet.
I hate parades. When I was a lieutenant in the 82nd Airborne, which many of those soldiers were from, we did I think there were about 10 to 14,000 member pass and review, which is a huge monster parade. And it was very old school. And we practiced for days and days and days, and then uniforms had to be perfect. And you know, it's not what we do. And we all hated it. And it's horrible. So my heart goes out to all those soldiers that did it, and good for you for following your orders and for doing it. And I'm proud of you for doing that. At the same time, we hate parades. Mm-hmm. I've celebrated birthdays for the Army in combat zones. I've done it in the Pentagon. I've done it at Fort Bragg. I've done it literally all around the world. And our the Army concept of a celebration of our birthday is we have a birthday cake, number one, or many, depending on the number of troops.
Sure.
We invite up the oldest member of the group, the youngest member. They cut the cake, not the colonel or the general or the sergeant major. They cut the cake. We have brief, and I mean 3 or 4 minute speeches by a few people, the senior enlisted leader. We ask the junior person to speak. And we have cake, and we have like an hour break in the day, and we celebrate us, and we celebrate us.
Yeah.
And we tell stories, and it's very low key, but yet everyone appreciates the cake, you know. Unfortunately, that's not what happened here on Saturday.
What I'm hearing from you, sir, is you take an hour out of your day to celebrate the culture of the military and what you have done, because more than that, honestly, is a diversion of time, manpower, resources, and you got to get back to work and do the thing. Whereas this parade, and I share your feelings about this as far as them coming here to Washington and doing what they were told to do to celebrate. I get that. But that is a massive diversion of resources, time, manpower, projects that are not getting done, work that's not being done, all to the tune of tens of millions of dollars when you said perfectly, they don't want to be there.
Right. And Jane, answering your question specifically is that in contrast to the Russian parades, the North Korean parades, where you see everybody literally marching perfectly.
Yes.
Well, those are typically because they spend hundreds and hundreds. I mean, literally, we're talking hundreds, not tens, but hundreds and hundreds of hours practicing. Well, what are they doing? They're practicing marching.
Yeah.
Now, in the United States military, thank goodness those days that I was involved with as a lieutenant many decades ago are long gone. We don't march. The only people who train how to march are ceremonial units,
right,
like the 3rd Infantry Regiment out of Fort Myer for funerals and for state events. They've got to look sharp. Their uniforms have got to be super straight. And it's like, that's an honor for them to do what they do to represent the military with foreign dignitaries and for burials and so on. The average soldier, including me, we barely go left, right, left, right. So in answering your question, I don't think it was a deliberate act to say they were basically protesting silently. I don't think so. I really don't. That's too many people. It's unlikely. I think it's because we don't practice that.
Well, and I think you make an excellent, excellent point. Good heavens, they are trained to go to war. They are not trained to march in formation. They are not trained to look like a marching band. That's not what our troops are trained for. And it makes me think, Major General, that when we look at these troops in North Korea and Russia, you almost have to wonder if they have a unit that isn't specially devoted just to that.
Well, but remember, there are massive numbers of those soldiers that are in those parades. I mean, massive numbers. We had whatever it was, 6,000 or 7,000. They will have 10, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 all marching with just as concise movements. It is a large, very large parade. And so you probably have seen memes all over the place with, you know, Putin and the leader of North Korea laughing at our soldiers and so on, and our tanks being, instead of it being 200 tanks, there's only like 50 tanks.
Right.
Well, the point is, our military trains for combat, and that is what we do, and we are excellent at it, and everybody in the world knows we're good at this. We're not trying to beat our chest. That's why we don't have parades like this.
Right.
We will see you on the battlefield. We're not going to see you on the parade field. So I don't think this was a silent protest. I think it's just indicative of the fact that, thank goodness, and I hope it never changes, we don't devote lots of time to practice marching.
Yeah. Sir, one of the things that we talked about last week, I think this parade is indicative of where the administration has gone, because we shouldn't forget that he wanted to do this in his first term. And the people around him, the guardrails, essentially,
yes,
whether it was military or just even in the White House, said, no, we can't do this. We shouldn't do this. It doesn't look good. I don't know if you were if you were still working at the time, but it shows just that the guardrails are gone. He can do whatever he wants, and everyone's going to say, yes, that's a wonderful idea. Let's have a parade. But also, was there any, in your experience, any president or anyone who said, maybe we should have a parade? That would be a good idea.
So it's important to look back in history. The United States has had military parades. Mm-hmm. It's like at the end of World War One, at the end of World War II, after Desert Storm. However, it was in the moment. It wasn't like, let's have a parade today.
Yeah.
And the idea that it was a 250th anniversary, yeah, whatever.
Right.
I mean, that's just not good enough. It's not worth spending all of that taxpayer money, your money, my money, and all your listeners' money to put that parade on. It was obvious, and it was sad.
It was,
quite frankly.
Yes.
All the empty bleachers. I mean, it was just absolutely feeding the egos of the people that were in those stands right there in front of the White House or the side of the White House. And it's just very, very unfortunate. It was an absolute inappropriate use of taxpayer money and of soldiers' time. I need to also comment, you know, I have stood in Red Square. I have stood in Tiananmen Square. I have stood in North Korea on the edge of the DMZ. I have seen the way that dictators use their military not only to, quite frankly, show their might on TV, but also, quite frankly, it's a threat to the people.
To their own people.
To show, hey, don't screw with us, yep, because these guys could be in your backyard tomorrow. Mm. And by the way, it happens all the time. And that is something where we must not ever allow this to be normalized. It is absolutely not right to have soldiers and Marines on the street of LA. I am appalled. The president has approved 700 additional people for Florida, Texas, and somewhere else. I just saw the press release, Texas, Florida, Louisiana, to help with ICE operations. We've got to get the military out of this business and turn it over to those that are trained to do this. It just appalls me. It is a misuse of, again, we need these scarce, highly trained resources to practice and do the things they need to do to protect the nation,
yes,
not to implement his policies internally in the United States.
If you're just joining us, retired Major General Randy Manner is our guest with the U.S. Army for more than 30 years, talking about all the many developments around the second Trump presidency. And going back to what you had said about Trump sending in troops into L.A. without the request of the governor, without the request of California's attorney general, the L.A. police chief, the L.A. mayor, no one requested this. And now I also saw this morning that they are planning on more ICE raids in blue cities. Now they're going to concentrate on blue cities. I can only imagine, Randy, that the troops have to be appalled by this duty.
So I have been talking with only a few dozen people in the Guard and in active duty. And it's important for your listeners to hear, while of course the exact details are still working their way through the court system, it is my opinion, these are probably legal orders. I mean, that's my opinion based on being the Vice Chief of the National Guard, the Acting Vice Chief of the National Guard Bureau. And given that they're legal orders, the military is obligated to do it. Now, is it make it right? Well, of course not. Is it a gross misuse of a scarce resource? Absolutely it is. What we are seeing is two important things. Two important things. I want to applaud the law enforcement of Los Angeles. They are doing a wonderful job keeping things under control. And this is, again, a law enforcement operation, not a military operation.
Right.
I say again to your listeners, this is a law enforcement operation, not a military operation. There is zero need for those military. There's zero need, especially Marines. If that's not using military to intimidate the local population, I've worked with Marines all over the world. Marines have one objective. Go kill that target. Okay, boss, I'm going to go kill that target. I'm going to knock it down. And they are they're best in the world at what they are trained to do. That does not make them qualified in any manner of any imagination to put them in with United States citizens literally feet apart. That's not right.
We're going to continue our conversation with retired Major General Randy Manner on the other side. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Matt and Air on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 9 to 11. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
Hey, it's John Mino.
And Jim Schmidt from Mino and the Mayor.
Want to stay in the loop with all things Northeast Wisconsin? Sign up for the WGBW weekly newsletter.
Get the latest local stories, updates on the weather, and a special feature from our Mino and the Mayor podcast.
It's your one-stop shop for real news and great conversation in Northeast Wisconsin.
Log on to WGBW.fm today and get signed up.
Real news, great conversation. Sign up today at WGBW.fm/newsletter.
Hey, it's Amanda, and we all know that Northeast Wisconsin has some of the best events around, but trying to find them all can be tricky. So here at WGBW, we decided to do the work for you. Prevent boredom on any night by going to WGBW.fm and click events in the top right corner. You'll never have to spend forever scrolling to find out what's going on in your area. And if you got an event to share, hit us up by emailing info@WGBW.fm. We can work together to have real news and great conversation while giving you the 411 on what's happening in New Wisco.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. For the last few months, Governor Tony Evers has said repeatedly that he would make a decision about whether or not to run for a third term after the state budget process is completed. In a recent opinion column at the Recombobulation Area, I made the argument that the decision that Evers should make should be to not seek a third term as Wisconsin's governor. This argument is not one of ideological differences or policy disagreements. Tony Evers has been a good governor and has served the state well. This more has to do with Evers' age. He'll be 75 years old in November 2026, and about how the Democratic Party has had a massive, inescapable problem in its unwillingness to pass the torch to the next generation. Tony Evers needs to do what so many other Democrats have struggled so mightily to do and step aside when the time is right. And after Joe Biden's catastrophic 2024, this is a conversation we need to be having, and we need to be having it now. Democrats can't keep repeating the same mistakes over and over. It's time to do things differently.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
I was stuck in a state of panic and endless rituals, so I made the call.
Mental health care works when you make the call. Visit mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
We come back to the Civic Media Spotlight with Mino and the Mayor. In this segment, they welcome Pam Yonke, the fabulous farm babe, to discuss Dairy Month, farm breakfasts, and the mental health challenges farmers face all around the state.
Hey, welcome back. Mino and the Mayor here. We're going to get back to Kevin Van Ness in just a few minutes, talk a little bit more about what they did last night and all these. Boy, the number one thing I think about when I see these forecasts are
outdoor beds,
weddings,
man.
And yeah. High school graduations. We have our guest on convoy.
Yes, we do.
All right. Okay, let's introduce Pam Yonke, the fabulous farm babe, the Midwest Farm Report, coming your way on WGBW and WISS. June, of course, is Dairy Month and Mental Health Awareness Month. And welcome, Pam. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Yeah, I'm doing well. I'm doing well, just like you guys, watching out to see what this weekend weather is going to look like.
Oh, boy.
Do you have any breakfasts on the farms this weekend coming up?
Oh, of course. Of course. I mean, let's face it, every weekend there's about 16, we're averaging about 16 dairy events on a Saturday or Sunday around the state. And we've got a brunch that's coming up on Saturday, and we've got a couple more that are on Sunday, kind of using the last gasp of June to try to get the people together. And I'll tell you what, I've brought this up before. If you are thinking about going to any June dairy event, go where the cows are, because there will be an incredible amount of energy. And I'm not just talking people, I'm talking technology that will be working this weekend to make sure those beautiful bovines are kept cool and comfortable. And you might be in a better spot if you go hustle and hang with the cows than worry about standing in line for the food.
Well, but I told Jim about my son's high school graduation
about 10 years ago now, and it was like the hottest day of the summer. It was like literally 94 degrees. We had a big tent, and one of the guests or whatever, relatives said, "Hey, I'll bring in a farm fan." And I'm thinking, what are you going to do with a farm fan? That thing cooled off everybody. Everybody was completely comfortable by that one farm fan. I don't know. And it wasn't like it's one of these things that, you know, blows everything all over the place. It just really distributed air. What's the secret of those things, Pam?
Well, they have they run at quite a few RPMs, and they really do have to work through a lot of air. If you walk into a barn, I know that most people probably have, but pay attention to the ground, the floor. A veterinarian that I used to work with always said, if you can kind of see the barn lime, which is kind of the white substance we put down to absorb moisture, if you can see the barn lime kind of moving or the feeds kind of moving, that's the way you want your air circulating. You want enough CFM so that there's actually movement of those particles, because then you know the cows are comfortable.
Oh, interesting.
You know, you talk about those breakfasts on the farm, and you know, Johnny and I both done a ton of them, but that's the breakfast is really the small part of that. To go out and tour those farms, you talked about the technology, but there's so much to see out there. That is just it's a great event for anybody, but for families, it's especially great. And there's just so much out there. And I think sometimes people think these poor cows, but you know, they're treated pretty well.
And they've got their own routine.
Huh?
They've got their own routine.
Well, yeah. And the way they milk them now, some of it's so automated too. And it's just, it's a great thing. So
well,
you spend that.
Like I said, they come first.
Yeah. Right. Which it should be. So this weather, 90s, maybe even 100 this weekend? I mean, does that.
Right.
Tell me what are the farmers? I mean, do they rely on this farmer's almanac? Do they think our weather's good here?
No.
Take it away, Pam.
Farmer's almanac is a nice little conversation piece, but as far as reliability, I don't think that I know any farmers that plant by it or worry about it. But we do have a lot of technology that's telling us what's going on, and it's not just about the animals. We have to think about our crops. I mean, I farm in Oconee County, and let me tell you, we could use a few more degree growing units, we call it. So heat is a wonderful thing in moderation, just like everything else. And what we've ended up being is a little on the cool side for the month of June. So our soybeans, our corn is a little bit behind where we'd like it to be. Now people say, oh, well, great. The farmers will love it this weekend. No. Nobody likes 90 plus in Wisconsin with the humidity it brings. A corn plant, for example, will basically start to shut down when you get into the mid and upper 80s. It's doing that to conserve moisture. It doesn't know when the next rain is coming. So it'll take advantage of the heat up into a certain point, and then you'll see it close down. And I'm sure there's a lot of folks listening that say, oh, yeah, you know, some of the ground is cracked where they haven't picked up the showers. That's a survival mechanism for that plant. So 90s are not what we're looking for. Nice, you know, a couple 80-degree days would help us catch up a lot. But 90s, the plant just cannot really maximize on all that excessive heat. So it goes into survival.
I did not know that.
No, me then. Khan's our expert golfer, and he's with you guys. He's right, the 80s versus the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Well, when you drive past the field and you're just glancing out your car window, truck window, if you ever see corn plants, they start to wrap. The leaves will start to kind of wrap into a swirl. That's a survival mechanism, doing what it can to keep the moisture in the plant. Wow. So when we see the plant start to wrap, that's a sign that too hot.
Too hot.
Hey, I would have thought just the opposite. I would have thought, this is great. We got some water now. Hotter the better. I just learned something.
Is that true that corn, right? Did you say if it's not knee-high by the 4th of July, it's going to die? Is that true, or is that just one of those things we grew up with?
No, that's another one of those. It's a nice reference point, I think. I think most farmers hope to heck that their corn's knee high by 4th of July. It's kind of a visual benchmark that you can use.
Yes.
And it's not so much about that point in time, but come on, guys, you're in Green Bay. You know, we start thinking right after 4th of July, then it's all of a sudden, you know, how much do we have left? When is that first frost? When is that first killing freeze? And that's really what a lot of farms have to start thinking about. Okay, wow. Which field is knee-high by 4th of July? When are we going to start chopping silage? Which fields are farther along? Which are going to need a little bit more time? Which are we worried about that are really delayed and may not make it to first frost in the condition we want? So, you know, like I said, we worry about the weather when it comes to spring planting. Now we worry about the weather as far as plant advancement or making hay.
Mino and the Mayor is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WISS and WGBW weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Chuck Sievertson. Calling for a diplomatic solution to the Iran-Israel crisis, a United Nations official at an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council today. Mideast governments and leaders of France, Germany, and the United Kingdom agree. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth.
Any retaliation by Iran against the United States of America will be met with force far greater than what was witnessed.
Reaction in Congress is mixed. Republican leaders back the decision. Congressman Jim Himes, Connecticut Democrat, is not the only lawmaker saying Congress should have been consulted.
This raid was signaled many days in advance. It's not inconceivable that the Iranians, not being dumb people, might have put this stuff on a truck and taken it elsewhere, in which case we just, you know, closed a bunch of, you know, tunnels in a mountain.
President Trump lashing out at Republican Congressman Thomas Massie of Kentucky for acting without congressional approval. This is ABC News.
Another setback for Garrett Mitchell. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball? Brewers center fielder Garrett Mitchell injured his shoulder sliding into base Friday night in Nashville. That's the same shoulder he had surgery on. Garrett Mitchell will now have to undergo more testing. The Brewers wrapping up their series in Minnesota against the Twins. Tomorrow night they'll be back home against the Pirates. The Brewers winning a shutout yesterday, 9-0 in Minnesota. Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
Well, it's all predicated on a lot of things falling into place. We don't have any special sauce. We understand how we have to play, and when we do it, we're pretty good.
Girls high school soccer, the Muskego Warriors beat Madison West 3-0 in a shutout in overtime to win the WIAA Division I state title for the fourth year in a row. In Division II, Brookfield Central defeated Pewaukee 2-1. And in Division III, Catholic Memorial over Edgewood 4-2 to win their 12th state championship in program history. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Danny Boyle is back with the release of 28 Years Later, his long-awaited third installment to the 28 Days franchise. In a recent article in Variety, the Slumdog Millionaire Oscar-winning director says, due to cultural appropriation, he probably couldn't direct a film like Slumdog Millionaire nowadays, but says he's okay with that and that he would want a young Indian director to have that opportunity to tell the story. What a cool dude. Boyle's other credits include Trainspotting and 127 Hours. Timothy Oliphant is on a roll. The star of Justified has a new show on Apple TV Plus called Lucky, where he stars opposite Anna Taylor-Joy. But Oliphant wasn't done. He still managed to find room in his calendar to join the cast of another Apple show called Stick, alongside Owen Wilson. The Emmy-nominated Oliphant will next be seen in FX's Alien Earth, which drops in August, and he will join a new Peacock show called Five Star Weekend. Cha-ching. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your Fox Valley forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear skies, lows in the mid-70s. We'll have a southwest wind continuing to gust to 25 miles per hour. Another breezy, hot, and humid day for Monday. Showers and thunderstorms likely in the afternoon. Highs near 86, heat index over 90.
Right now, it's 93.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Mark Sommerhauser, the communications director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, analyzing the impacts of the big brutal bill.
That number that you mentioned of nearly $15,000 per person, literally about a quarter of the state's economy.
Basically a quarter of the state's economy coming from the federal government. I'm not hearing from Republicans in the state in their biennial budget planning any sort of contingency plan for major disruption in federal funding coming into the state.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Todd Michaels joins us now.
I have to give a shout out to Oshkosh. It's a very underrated city.
There was also a restaurant there I really liked. I don't think it's there anymore.
Yeah, the Tally's was great. I may have gone to like a prom dinner there or something like that back in my day too, Pete.
A little calzone before you tear it up in the dance floor.
Man, there's nothing better than wearing a tuxedo and a little calzone in your cummerbund.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jay, Matt, and Aaron, Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Civic Media News Director Charlie Pittman joins us to cover all the weekend news. And then we're talking ticks in hour number two with entomologist PJ Leash, the bug guy. Don't miss it.
Matt and Aaron on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Up next on the Civic Media Spotlight, we go to the John and Gordy Show. In this segment, John and Gordy talk with Jesse Christensen from Cannabis DMP, exploring the safe use of cannabis products for ailments like sleep and anxiety. And he emphasizes the importance of transparency with his customers.
WMDX 92.7, John and Gordy in a beautiful morning.
It's gorgeous. We have sunshine, highs today getting into the low to mid 80s, and dew points are high. Humidity, it's muggy out there.
It is awful.
Maybe some showers and storms later. Okay, welcoming into our studios here, Jesse Christensen. He is with Cannabis DNP, and they have you have a website, cannabisdnp.com. Jesse, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And the DNP stands for Doctor of Nursing.
Doctor of Nursing Practice, correct.
Yeah. Yep. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like it.
A lot goes into this, your website, and we direct people over there to cannabisdnp.com, simple as that, and check it out. It does a lot to inform the individual about what you're into and how you have made this this product that you have. And that's what we want to kind of get into. There's a lot of different points of view on what is available out there now. And there are a lot of shops that are dotting the State Street and all the other avenues here in the city. So what is it that we're missing? A lot of people, have kind of been brought up, Gordy and I, of course, came from a generation of just, buds and weed.
The flower.
The flower. But, things have changed so dramatically now because this is, legal. Hemp. This is where a lot of this comes from, is hemp, and a lot of these stores have popped up. You got to fill us in and, what exactly, introducing people to this industry, because there's still a lot of mystery surrounding it. We're seeing the shops, but we're not real familiar with what to expect when we go into these shops.
Sure, sure.
Or go to your website and your product.
Yeah. Sure, sure. So, yeah, there's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of shops. There's a ton of products. As a matter of fact, I just got back from Chicago at the Champs Trade Show where I got to see over like 2,000 vendors selling multiple different products. Yeah. So it's an interesting industry. I like to err on the side of caution, so I stick more with the medicinal components and not so much the bright and shiny, colorful products that are out there on the market right now. So I like to stick with the low dose.
So when you say medicinal products, what kind of products are we talking about? Are we gummies and
So mine are taffies.
Taffy?
Yeah, not like the saltwater taffies. They're more dense. But they're also DEA registered hemp farms. That's where I get my hemp from. So I know that they're clean. They get tested for pretty much every pesticide, every metal. I have the chain of custody paperwork in case anybody wants to see it. Hmm. And then I use FDA regulated CGMP compliant kitchens to make sure that there's an added layer of safety with the cleanliness of the product itself. And that kind of is what separates mine from a lot of products. Mine are very focused for a couple of different reasons. I work with sleep and pain and stress and anxiety. So I work with pretty much only two products as of right now. I'm formulating a few others, but I like to work more with the low dose, judicious amounts and dose products.
Well, now you have a doctorate in this.
I do. I got it last year, May, from UW-Madison. Never would have thought that would ever have happened to me.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, there is a push to regulate the industry a little bit because there really aren't any regulations. No one saw this development happening.
Correct.
Because of the hemp product. Well, they wanted to grow hemp in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, everything just developed from there. And now people want some safeguards put up, some guardrails.
Yeah.
And that's kind of basically what you're providing with your product.
So, yeah, working in the healthcare industry, I want to make sure that what I give to my clients or my customers is exactly what it is. I like to be very transparent. Again, that's part of healthcare, is being very transparent with your customers. Other people out there, they have a tendency to want to mock up their COAs, their certifications, and try to get the most dose THC out of it to make it seem very strong and very potent, because that's the tendency of what sells here in Madison, Wisconsin, and in Wisconsin in general, is people want the most potent product, the newest product. And that's one of the things that I like about Minnesota, is with their rules and regulations. My products have been accepted up into the Minnesota market. That just kind of tells you what kind of product you're dealing with here in Wisconsin.
So in Wisconsin, what are the regulations?
There really are none.
Okay.
Yeah, there's
it's
really
just as long, open air. As it's long open. As the hemp derived, the hemp that you receive is less than 0.3% THC.
Okay.
And then you can manipulate your products however you choose.
That's right. And what is Delta 9? THC.
So here in Wisconsin, we have to kind of specify the different deltas. The different THCs are like a family, 8, 9, and 10, and others. Delta 9 basically just, it tells you where the double structure is, the double bond is on the chemical structure. So let's say the Delta 8 would be over on this way, Delta 9 would be here, Delta 10 would be here. It just tells you where that double bond is on the chemical structure.
Does that determine what kind of product you make out of it, or what it treats necessarily?
Not so much what it treats, just what kind of product it is. So Delta 9, we know, is the major main component, psychoactive component of the cannabis plant.
Okay.
So it's the most abundant. Delta 8 is in the cannabis plant. It's just in such a low amount that to make a product from the plant itself would be extremely expensive. So what we do is, or what companies do is, they'll isomerize Delta 9 into Delta 8 with using different chemical.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
So Jesse, tell us about, now your medical background tends to focus on working with people that are 40 and older?
13 and over, but yeah, my sweet spot is about 40 and above. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So they're probably customers of yours are coming to you for the first time, like, and what do you tell them as far as what, if they have an ailment, let's say they have arthritis or something, I mean, maybe there's a medical reason that they've heard that your products will help them.
Sure.
How do you guide them? What do you ask them? And what do you recommend for them? If I have arthritis or I can't sleep at night, that kind of thing.
So the workup is kind of like it's personalized. Mm-hmm. Everybody is different. Everybody has their own medical background, medical history, medications that they're on, which a lot of people don't ask about. And if there's a concern for me, let's say you have a recent heart condition.
Yes.
Cannabis products may not be for you at this point in time.
Exactly.
But as soon as that becomes a more maintained, then we come back and revisit possible low dose, starting dose of like 1 milligram. THC or CBD. But safety is always a concern. Transparency is always a concern. If I'm working with some patients with some mental health issues, I always ensure that they're talking with their psychiatrist or psychologist about any cannabinoid products. I give them my card. I'm very open about it. They can contact me at any time, but safety is a priority to me.
And you mentioned a heart condition. There has been, of course, a study that's out there that said that lot of people who smoke are more prone to have a heart attack. Now, what's the science on that?
So I think you're referring to the ACC paper, maybe the AHA paper. So the ACC paper that came out in 2025, I think in May. So there was a correlation, but they couldn't really determine a causation. And then when they were talking about their study, I believe they only used 4 key words when they were looking up all of the medical patients' histories. So they use the words cannabis, stroke, heart failure, and something else. So it was very skewed. The information, was very skewed. So if you're only using those keywords, your numbers are going to be very high for those reasons. Now, if they would have added in some other things like tobacco use or BMI or other things like that, you can get a more well-rounded version. But because of it's news, it's in the headlines, everybody's curious about it. And again, they're just promoting that same stigma from 1970 of be afraid of this. You don't have to be afraid of this if you're using it consciously, if you're using this for the right purpose with the right product. Now, it is shown that inhalation does increase your heart rate by about 8 beats per minute.
Mm-hmm.
It does increase your blood pressure a little bit, depending on your product that you're using. But over time, your body eventually becomes tolerant of that, and then it actually will drop your blood pressure depending on the product you're using.
So are you talking about inhalation of smoke, marijuana smoke, or are you talking about inhalation with vaping? Is there a difference?
There is a difference.
Okay.
So when I'm working with clients and they're not completely sure, and especially they have like an acute outburst of pain,
mm-hmm.
The inhaled form is very quick. It's got a very quick onset, but it doesn't last as long as the oral or the ingestion route. So when we're talking about inhalation, what I like to choose is the vaporization method. It's the safest method. You don't combust the material, unlike mm-hmm. smoking, let's say, a joint or, mm-hmm. or a bowl of marijuana or mm-hmm. cannabis. With that being said, the vaporization method also will increase your heart rate and your blood pressure just mm-hmm. because it's very acute. It's not a controlled.
Very sudden.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's very sudden.
Yeah.
Talking with Jesse Christensen from CannabisDNP.com. Do you have an actual retail location?
I don't, but okay.
It's all online.
On my site, you can find all the locations my products are available.
Okay.
Well, I think that what surprised me looking at the locations is that you can pick up your product at Piggly Wiggly.
So, wait, what? really?
Sure.
Is there a Piggly Wiggly in Madison?
Out in Sauk.
Out in Sauk.
Oh, Sauk, yeah, right on Highway 12.
Yeah, that's okay. Out in Bellevue, too, or Belleville, yeah.
So okay. There you go.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Okay, so we talked about inhaled products. Well, okay, what about gummies versus, you're offering taffy now? I mean, is that about the safest route to go as far as any ill side effects?
So the oral route, the ingestion when you actually eat it, mm-hmm. I like this method because it lasts longer and you don't need as much.
Okay.
The inhale version works great, especially if you have acute issues and you need something right away. Yeah. But when you actually eat the edible, it breaks down through the liver, similar to like a lot of oral medications. And then it gets in the bloodstream, which is about 4 times stronger than what it originally was. Mm-hmm. But it also lasts about 8 to 12 hours longer. So you get that full effect for a longer period of time.
And what are we treating sometimes when people want to take this? Is it the lack of sleep?
Sure.
The inability to sleep?
Sure.
Pain, aches and pains?
Yep. So my two products, the sleep and pain and the stress and anxiety, those are the major conditions that I see a lot of people for. And this happened even before I was I had a doctorate. This was when I was working the floor as a bedside nurse from 2016 on to 2023.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people come in for insomnia or pain. And I'm not a huge fan of opiates. That's everybody knows that,
mm-hmm.
but there is a place for them. It just should not be used long-term. It should not be used chronically. Cannabinoids, on the other hand, can be used long-term. There's no negative, horrible side effects
like
opioids do have. But yeah, sleep and pain and stress and anxiety are a couple of things that I treat. There's a couple of different forms of insomnia that I work with. And then mm-hmm. we talk about dosing to help better help with that problem.
And this taffy, can you break it up? It seems like everybody is, you know, taking little chunks.
Yep.
One review said I took a quarter
of
it. So is it possible to do that or to break it up like
Absolutely.
That?
So you can either just take a little bite off of it
mm-hmm.
Or you can use the scissors and cut it. But each taffy is individually packaged within the packaging to help with shelf life, to help with longevity, and also to help with safety for little fingers getting into it.
And you would probably recommend, you know, trying a little to
yep,
see
absolutely.
What your limit is
mm-hmm.
and just add on to it if you need more.
Yep. Everybody has their own sensitivity.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jesse, if people want to find out more, the best place is your website, right?
Correct. Yes, sir.
Go to CannabisDNP.com. Yep.
And this Saturday, I'll be at Garver Sessions.
Oh.
I'll be there for the daytime and the p.m. And then Sunday, I'll be back at the Northside Farmers Market, where I usually am every Sunday.
All right.
Very good.
Well, fantastic. This is great. Again, learning just a little bit about it really does help.
Good.
Appreciate you being with us, Jesse.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
We will be back with Leftovers on John and Gordy.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out as Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Remembering Vietnam, brought to you by The Dispensary.
May of 1969.
I was near Dak To in Vietnam. Up until then, except for a few rockets and mortars, everything was pretty calm. But then things changed. We started getting ground assaults. Seemed like almost every night, many times, they would probe the perimeter. Then they got inside. I don't know how many times, but they started bringing heavy stuff. 122-millimeter rockets. These things were 6 feet long and huge in diameter. All they did was prop them up on a tripod somewhere in the jungle and fire them like a giant bottle rocket. You would hear the whoosh when it was fired, then thump, thump. If you were on guard duty in the main tower looking out into the jungle, you could see a puff of smoke. Then you'd see them coming in. Mike Brzezinski, United States Army, Vietnam.
Hear this full story at WGBW.FM. Click on Remembering Vietnam. Brought to you by The Dispensary. Online at thed8dispensary.com.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Voting Rights Lab reports there were 59 state bills introduced on proof of citizenship for voter registration this year, and 160 bills concerning voter ID. A handful have made it near the finish line, but not all have passed. Since President Donald Trump's baseless accusations of mail-in voting fraud in 2020 and his unfounded claims of widespread non-citizen voting in the 2024 election, Republican-dominated legislatures have raced to pass stricter voter ID and proof of citizenship laws, despite no widespread abuse of either. In New Hampshire, versions of SB 218 were advanced, requiring submission of ID and proof of citizenship for absentee registration, and are now in a committee of conference. In Texas, a high-priority documentary proof of citizenship bill died without action at the end of the session. In Texas alone, there were 15 bills introduced to provide documentary proof of citizenship and 10 tightening voter ID laws. Nevada Governor Joe Lombardo surprisingly vetoed a bipartisan voter ID bill attempting to codify a widely supported ballot initiative. Democrats negotiated expanded ballot drop boxes in exchange for supporting voter ID. His veto statement said the bill did not address implementing voter ID for mail-in ballots. Wyoming and Indiana passed proof of citizenship earlier this year. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
To finish off this Civic Media spotlight, Chad Holmes chats with Robin Vargas of the Marathon County Public Library for a local update on the WXCO Morning Report during mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
And welcome back. It's Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app. And as we do every other week, we are very happy to welcome back across the table to talk about what's going on at the Marathon County Public Library with Robin Vargas. Robin, good morning.
Good morning, Chad.
I said to you when you came in, what's happening? And you said, there's a lot going on.
There's a lot, yes.
Again, it's probably unfair to ask this, but is summertime as busy as it gets at the library, or is there a time of the year that's even busier?
I would say that this is it. Yeah. Yeah, this is definitely it, especially June and July. It feels like, although even August is pretty busy because a lot of other, like the pools close down in early August and mm-hmm. a lot of other activities wrap up by then. And so then folks are like, oh, where else do we go? Let's go to the library, of course.
That is the way to think. Absolutely. Let's get right into it. What are some of the early summer activities that you're getting underway?
Yeah, for sure. So later on today, actually, at George Street Park, we're having a garden story time. That's at 10:30 today with the North Central Wisconsin Master Gardeners. They're coming and doing some flower planting with the kids. So they'll get to take that home with them and, you know, get their hands in the dirt and get to experience that. Also in Rothschild tomorrow, Thursday, June 19th, we're doing Read to a Therapy Dog. So that's from 5:30 to 6:30. I've had some folks ask, it's not going to be back at WASA this year, but head on over to Rothschild. Mm-hmm. Just a quick, you know, 15-minute drive. So kids can head over there and do that tomorrow night.
Man, starting off in Rothschild is the place to be early on.
Apparently, yeah.
And that's, again, one of the aspects that's always interesting is that you have so many, you don't rely on just having folks involved here in Wausau. It's a beautiful building, obviously, here in downtown Wausau. Mm-hmm. But boy, you do take a lot of these activities straight to the people.
We sure do. We try to. We know it's hard, you know, if you've got four kids to pack them all up in a van and bring them down. So, yeah, we try and bring these events out to everyone that we can.
Are there any other, let's keep it with the, maybe some of the branches.
Yeah,
any other branch activities coming up?
Yeah, for sure. So on Thursday, June 19th, both in Marathon and Athens, we have animal acrobats. So it's going to be at the Marathon Elementary School at 10 a.m. and then at the Athens Community Hall at 1:30 p.m. And that's all about learning how different animals move, like how to identify their tracks. And then they're going to be bringing with them some live animals, like a bearded dragon and a snake. So if you're into that, I would not be. I would stay far away in the back, but kids can get the chance to see those up close.
I was thinking when you said animal acrobats, we're going to see some animals doing some backflips.
Maybe. I don't know. You'll have to go and see for yourself. I don't know. We'll see how well that bearded dragon is trained.
Let me ask you real quickly, when you have these activities, I mean, we think about sometimes library activities, think about, you know, books and maybe authors or stuff like that. How difficult is it when you have something like you're bringing animals in?
Yeah.
I mean, is that hard? Is it, or do you have a lot of folks that really help you out with that?
Yeah, I mean, we bring in these, you know, performers that have experience, of course. But yeah, it definitely is a little bit outside of our scope, and so that is why we bring in some other friends to help us out with that. But yeah, it is a little bit different from the books aspect, but just another opportunity for kids to learn.
Fantastic. And we're talking to Robin Vargas from the Marathon County Public Library, as we do every other week here on 98.9 WXCO. Well, let's continue, because you said it's such a very busy time, and you got yourself a list here to talk about. What else is happening?
Yeah, so out at the branches, well, this week, well, say in Hatley, all week long you can go and make DIY paper beads. Can make those, string them up into necklaces or bracelets or any other kind of craft. So just stop in. And then next week out at the branches, we've got quite a few crafts happening. So in Athens, you can stop by and make a DIY kaleidoscope. In Mosinee, you can make some faux stained glass sun catchers. And then in Marathon City and Stratford, you can make a cute little paper snail craft.
Very cool. And something that's really, again, that kind of jumps out in when I talk to you and we hear about some of these activities, it's so important to keep children's minds active and to, you know, not to let it just slide away, especially during the summer months. And all these kind of activities are vital for the development, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah. Especially like our reading challenges, you know, we want to keep those kids reading during the summer and and also just develop a lifelong love for the library, you know, get them in while they're young and get them hooked on books or the programs that we have and keep them coming back.
You said programs and they keep on coming. What else is happening?
Yeah. So let's see. Next week on Tuesday, June 24th, we've got the Raptor Education Group, Reggie. They're coming and doing some programs in Edgar and Mosinee called Winged Wonders. So about having different owls maybe and different birds of prey. So you can go learn all about that. That's going to be at Oak Street Park in Edgar at 10:30 and then at River Park in Mosinee at 1:30. Also in Hatley next week on Monday, they have zine making for teens. So teens can come on in and make their own zines. That is at 3 o'clock on Monday.
For us old people, that's magazines, right?
It is, yeah.
I know. It's like, no, but I chuckle because it's like, that must be something that's fun as well for you, I imagine, seeing the kids and being and feeling that energy that that the kids have. I mean, that, you know, keep up to what is going on. Because otherwise, you know, some of this stuff could fly over the head. But I imagine being around the kids a lot,
we try and stay on top of it. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
We will have more with Robin Vargas from the Marathon County Public Library in just over 20 minutes at 7:52 during a local segment here on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on 98.9 WXCO. Coming up next, it is the Farm Report. Get the latest on the farm news. And then after that, back to Pat. He will have his weekly homeroom segment coming up. That's in just a few minutes. Glad you can be with us here on this hump day Wednesday morning. With Ian Welsh, I'm Chad Holmes. It is Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app.
To learn more about these shows and all of the programming across the Civic Media Network, head over to civicmedia.us/shows to see the entire broadcast lineup. Follow the network on Facebook, Blue Sky, YouTube, X, and Instagram.
This is 97.9 WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media radio station.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Wayne Cabot.
This mission was not and has not been about regime change.
Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth this morning, President Trump this afternoon in a social media post asking why wouldn't there be a regime change, adding it's not politically correct to say that. Iran's supreme leader is in hiding, and Iran's ability to withstand the assault is in question. ABC News contributor Elizabeth Newman worked in Homeland Security during President Trump's first term.
The regime itself is very weak. You have Israel with air dominance over the entire country of Iran. That it really is kind of mind-boggling how weak they are.
Damage to the three Iranian nuclear sites is not clear. Mick Mulroy, former defense official, says the U.S. military operation likely set back the Iranian nuclear weapon program by 2 to 5 years. The State Department tonight issuing a new worldwide caution alert that does single out U.S. citizens for travel. This is ABC News.